Good evening and welcome to another Tuesday in Excellence in Internet Radio here on FTRradio.com. I am your host, Josh Gillespie, host of Gillespie. And with me, as always, is Mark Warner. How you doing, Mark? Mark's in a bit of a mood tonight. And we're going to be hearing about it
during
this.
Don't screw with me tonight, Gillespie. Just don't do it.
So you're saying now would not be the time to bring up Real M. Warner again?
Yeah, don't do that.
Because that
would kick your ass.
That was fun last week, I just have to say.
Yeah, I will kick your ass tonight, seriously.
Mark is swearing. It's going to be punchy. And we're also starting off this segment, our opening segment, with a little bit of a bang with a special guest, someone who hasn't been on the show in a while, and we've missed her dearly, our good friend Dina Fraioli. How are you doing, Dina?
Hello. Thank you for having me on again. And I've missed you guys as well.
Well, good. Now, last time we saw you was at CPAC, and I got an awesome bear hug from you.
I did, yes. I'm pretty good at the bear hugs, apparently.
Yes, you are.
And I am not ashamed slash embarrassed for the fact that I yelled your name so loudly that the entire hotel looked at me. Eh, fuck them, whatever.
I'm
glad. Poor Brodigan, though. I think Brodigan was really jealous because he was all like, look, I've got a beard. I'm from Long Island. Look, I've got a beard. I'm from Long Island. I was like, okay, I love you too, but you're not Josh Gillespie.
That's right. I got a beard and I'm from Indiana.
What is this sick obsession with Josh Gillespie?
Dude, I am awesome.
I don't even want to hear it, Josh. I'm not asking you.
Hey, I'm only preaching what other people are saying.
Well, that Hannah girl, we almost got into like a real fight. Not really, but a kind of a fake fight.
A Twitter fight? A flame war, if you will? Like, over me. Little old me.
Yeah, I was like, girlfriend, you better back up. You don't know what you're dealing with. I'll cut you. And she was like, yeah, well, I'll cut you too. I'm like, I'm from New York. She's like, I'm in Montana. And I'm like, really?
She's got really? Guns. She's got guns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what she said. I was like, I got a gun. I was like, I'm from the mean streets of Brooklyn and you're from the mountains.
Actually, she's from Indiana. Oh. We blame her. She works for Right to Work.
Oh.
And she's a field rep.
Oh. They send you to glamorous places like Quad City, Iowa, or middle of nowhere, Montana, or Pennsylvania. The whole state.
The whole states, yeah. Well, she's pretty much covering the whole state.
Man, sorry.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Hannah, I apologize. I do love you. But, yeah, that's, I've dated some Right to Work people. They're interesting cats. Interesting cats. They usually go somewhere over to Campaign for Liberty, and then suddenly they're with Ron Paul. That's all I'm saying.
But, you know,
I swear to God, if she ends up with Ron Paul, I will vomit all over everything.
Mark, you've been one of Ron Paul's biggest supporters.
Josh Gillespie, kiss my ass.
I don't know. You know what I think? I think Ron Paul should be like, all right, I'm done with this president thing. I'm going to step into the Senate race. I think that's what he should do. You know why? Because it would be hilarious. Daddy and son.
Do you know what kind of cluster that would turn this Texas Senate race into?
If it was Ron Paul against Ted Cruz, that would be kind of funny. But you've got crazy Ron Paul against Ted Cruz, who's the closest thing that Texas has or the closest thing that we have this cycle to a Marco Rubio.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that Dewhurst isn't even close to becoming a senator in that state. But that's all fine and good because Texas is going to be red anyway. We're going to be fine with Texas.
That's right. We are.
Yeah, but it would still... What I was thinking is... And we will rule the Senate as father and son, you know, Ron and Rand.
Yeah.
It just would be so funny. Well, I mean, it would be like the land of the little people. Seriously.
The wars and the Constitution and the wars.
Yeah, we represent the lollipop gang. It would be hilarious. And this coming from someone who's like 5 feet tall is hilarious, but still, they're tiny.
I didn't know Rand Paul was that short. I knew Ron Paul was.
Oh, Rand! I saw Rand Paul in the Capitol, and I was like, "Oh my God, it's a friggin' leprechaun walking past me!" I had no idea.
Oh, he's so cute. I want to touch him. Pet him. Pet his head.
And the cooch Kucinich, he's itty bitty. I saw him, and I was seated, and I was like, "We are at eye level. We are at eye level, and yeah, I'm seated."
You gotta wonder how he ended up with the wife that he has, because she towers over him.
He must have something going on in the pants region that we do not know about.
I don't want to know, but...
I mean, I'm curious. I am curious, but I don't want to know.
Wow.
It's got to be something special, like spectacular.
FTR listeners, you certainly did not expect this. this early in Gillespie, did you?
Exactly, exactly.
Oh, so this is special, this is special. So, give us some of your thoughts real quick on the Senate. We're going to be talking with Jason Whitman of the Young Republicans a little bit later. I know he's going to be sharing some of his thoughts on the Senate, but I want to hear Dina's thoughts. One, because it's been so long since we've had you on the show, I just feel like the insights you have would be incredible.
Well, I think what's kind of funny is you've got Ben Nelson and Bill Nelson, and what they're doing right now is enthusiastically, they will not campaign with Obama. I think this is extremely interesting and important. They're staying very far away from Obama, and that's a bit of a tell. It's almost like, what was it, in 2006 when people were kind of like, okay, George, we don't really want to campaign with you.
Oh,
we have
I remember
enough
that.
Trouble.
I remember that.
So, yeah, stay in the White House. We'll do our thing over here. It's kind of getting to be that point with Obama right now, which is pretty interesting.
It is interesting. Only the first term and they're already avoiding him.
Exactly. And because Romney isn't exactly the perfect dream date candidate,
no,
I think Republicans are going to really focus on the Senate. So it's really important that we look at a lot of these candidates.
Mm-hmm. Now, hold on. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought Bill Nelson was, he's the Nebraska Nelson, right? No, Ben Nelson is the Nebraska
Nelson. Ben Nelson's Nebraska. Bill Nelson is Florida.
I thought Ben Nelson was retiring.
Yes.
Okay. So
He is.
Okay.
He's retiring.
Okay. So that should be a red pickup.
It will be. He is retiring. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Pryor in Arkansas, who's staying away.
Seriously, it's the Midwest. It all runs together. I know.
Nebraska can be funny.
What?
Nebraska can be funny.
They could be. They also have a unicameral form of government. What's up with that, Mark?
Oh, totally weird. But that's not the weird thing about Nebraska.
How is not the weird thing about Nebraska? Well, other than the fact that they got the Cornhuskers, I swear, a bunch of crybabies in that state. Oh, Colt McCoy, he was out of bounds.
He was whiny, out of bounds.
Bunch of whiny.
He was out of bounds.
Yeah, sure he was. All right. Anyway, so. I'm sorry, Dina. Go ahead.
Wow, you guys are crazy.
I know how to push Mr. Warner's buttons.
Well, the fun thing about Bob Kerry is that he's running for that seat as well against.
That's right.
He's the former governor, former senator, moved to New York, became part of the new school, the president of the new school, is coming back. He hasn't lived in Nebraska in what, like 35 years or something ridiculous?
Yeah. Sounds like a certain senator from Indiana, but he's actually been representing us.
Exactly. And so he's come back, and I think that the two, it's either going to be, I believe it's Sternberg or Brunning. Brunning is the one I'm really interested in. I think Brunning has a lot of stuff going on for him. I think he's really cool. He's the AG.
Mm-hmm.
He's just very strong, and he's a good conservative. So either way, Bob Kerry has no chance. Okay. It's going to be a Republican pickup. What is exciting? Okay, there's 23 seats.
Yes.
23 Democrat seats, 10 Republican seats, so a total of 33.
Yes.
And this is a year that if it becomes the wave election that I think it might be, we could pick up to 3 to 5 seats in the Senate.
Ooh.
But there's a lot of toss-up states. Yeah, I would take that too. You've got let's talk about one to begin with. Let's talk about Massachusetts.
Okay.
This race is going to draw so much attention and so much money that it is literally going to be one of the most expensive Senate races in history, period.
Now, question for you, Dina. Now, Scott Brown was able to win on the backs, not exclusively, but basically on a wave of some Tea Party sentiment. They were able to kind of ignore some of his more liberal leanings in an effort to get a Republican in Ted Kennedy's seat. Is there still that kind of love? Does Scott Brown still attract the independents that, you know, he needed to beat Martha Coakley? Is he going to...
I think he can. I really do think he can. I think that in 2010, the sort of wave there... there's two issues. One is that he did get to ride that wave of sort of some Tea Party support, but he was never dishonest about what he was saying. And what was a little frustrating to me about that whole thing was he said what he was going to do with the healthcare vote, and he said that, you know, the whole jobs.
Yeah.
He voted for exactly what he said he was going to, and that wasn't even just, I mean, granted, does that help him in this election mm-hmm. to keep those voters that are like, oh, dude, that guy was honest. You've got to be honest. And I think that's a good thing. I think that gives him integrity. Mm-hmm. I'm actually pleased with him. I don't think that makes him a rhino. I think that makes him a Massachusetts conservative. Or I'm sorry, people don't want to use that word. A Massachusetts Republican. And not lying, I think, is a good thing. Would you rather have those politicians that lie to you? But, you know, this is a different year. This is also a presidential year. Mm-hmm. And what we have to look at is a presidential race mm-hmm. on the ticket. So you've got these different Democrats on the ticket. Will Democratic support for Obama be very high in Massachusetts? More than likely. So is that a disadvantage to Scott Brown? Yes. But at the moment, it's a toss-up. It keeps going up and down. Mm-hmm. But I think Scott Brown does have a chance. I think we could hold on to that seat. That's just going to be, if you really want to see, you know, popcorn and fireworks, I think you'll pay attention to Massachusetts. It's going to be a very fun, ooh, exciting thing.
I'm looking forward to it. What about,
I'm always a fan.
What others are you thinking that at least could be potential pickups?
Florida. It looks like after a rough start, Connie Mack will get his act together against Lemieux and Nelson. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll be able to pick that up. Nelson is a very weak candidate. I also think that in Hawaii, we've got Linda Lingle. Very popular. Yeah, she was great chance for a pickup.
Really? Is it Daniel Akaka who's retiring?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to miss, just for the roll call alone, Daniel Akaka.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
I mean, the seat leans Democratic, but I really do think that I'm not saying that we will get it, but I'm saying that there is a good chance for that.
Well, you know, Linda Lingle has been a very popular Republican governor in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
But she's, I know true conservatives will probably be disappointed in her because they think, oh, they're finally getting rid of Olympia Snow. Well, here comes Linda Lingle, people. She's probably not Snow completely, but she's liberal-ish, but not a Democrat.
She's liberal-ish. I'd take her. I would definitely take her over Akaka.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. We've got Missouri. Steelman's numbers are looking fantastic. I like her in a fiscal sense. If she just continues to articulate, you know, the economy and work on stuff like that, I think she'll do very well. And she's done very well. Mm-hmm. And I always like, this is going to sound terrible, but woman against woman, much better. You don't have Claire being able to sort of frame the debate as, oh, those nasty men are so mean to me. If you've got girl-on-girl action, girl-on-girl action, it's a fair playing field.
Dina and just women said that.
Advantage. Yeah, I do. I did just say that. That happens.
That just happened. Now, yeah. This is the same person that ran against Roy Blunt in the primary, right?
Yes. There was some beef there, but there's no longer going to be any beef there. The people running are John Brunner, who's a businessman, and you've got Todd Akin, mm-hmm. rep. He's got issues. There's a lot of oppo against Todd Akin.
He's current congressman now, isn't he? Or is he a former congressman?
He's a current congressman, okay. I believe.
Yes. Okay, I can't remember. A name is familiar. I gotta be honest. I really don't spend much time focusing on Missouri, other than who is representing them in the Senate. So.
Exactly. I mean,
that's
why would you pay attention? but see, that's the beauty of a primary. That's the way it should be.
Exactly.
And that's not a bad thing. I mean, I know we're all up in arms over the whole presidential primary, but I'm not mad at states that voted for a guy I don't particularly like. The primary process is there for a reason. And I know I'm getting kind of off topic, but that's a good thing. It's good that we are able to do that. But at the end of the day, I know people keep saying this. People are mad about this. But we want to coalesce against a candidate who's going to be able to beat Barack Obama. And that's what we want. We don't want former years of Barack Obama.
That's now, true. Do you think Mitt Romney has a chance?
I think he has a chance.
We'll stay along this thread of thinking. What makes you think he has a chance?
Because I think that he's the only one tough enough to be able to handle Barack Obama. I think he's the only one with the fiscal experience to go up against Barack Obama. And it's telling, it should be telling to the rest of the country that the focus is solely on Mitt Romney. The eye of Sauron is pointing on Mitt Romney. It's not on anyone else. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't been on anyone else consistently since the GOP primary season started.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he was inevitable. I'm saying that good campaign managers and strategists know you have to know where your weakness is.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing that they're, or, and even there was a sign the other day, the RNC already starting to do fundraising with Romney.
Really?
Yeah, it's technically not necessarily what they should be doing. Like, I think that might be a little sketch, but...
Rumors have it that they're...
I believe I read that somewhere, so we're going to keep that as a rumor, but I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere that... I remember tweeting it like, oh, that's smart.
Well, let's be honest. Again, I'm not thrilled with Mitt Romney, but again, I'll happily vote for him in November, and... He's going to wrap up the nomination sometime soon if he really kind of hasn't already.
I mean, like, with what Krauthammer said, he wrote a piece about how, or he said it on TV, how it's smarter for Santorum to actually pull out Mitt. He's Catholic. He probably does pull out. Disclaimer, I love all Catholics. I love you to death. I do. I love Catholics. I love Christians. I love everyone, except for people who practice Sharia law. Other than that, I love everyone.
You're an equal opportunity.
Yes, I'm a lover. I'm a lover.
You are a lover.
that joke was just too good not to. I had to get in there.
That's true.
But he should get out of the race before Pennsylvania, and I don't disagree with that because I think he still has credibility intact. Mm-hmm. And enough people who saw some of the great things that he did, or some of the moves that he did in the campaign that were excellent, and we'll forget some of John Brabender's, mess-ups
sure.
with the candidate. Yes. And I think that keeps him in check for a 2016 run.
Seriously?
I do, actually.
Don't even bring that up.
Oh, and I think I'm the person, you know, who hates Santorum more than anyone else. I can't stand the guy. But he's
a whiner.
But I mean, you go through one experience of a cycle, you pull out at the appropriate moment, and then you go for it again.
Oh my god! People might think they're listening to the Snark Factor tonight.
Oh my god! Yeah, seriously, I've been on the Snark Factor too much. I think that's what it is.
Okay, we'll use that as the reason.
That is so funny. But yeah, no, it's...
Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor.
I love Fingers Malloy. He is just fantastic.
He is.
He is just fantastic. And you know, I mean, a lot of these... If there's going to be good... I'm sorry, I totally cut you off.
No, it's okay. Go ahead. Keep on talking.
I was going to say, a lot of these candidates, we want good, exciting candidates because that drives out turnout and it makes sure that Republicans really do go out and vote because we recognize that we may not love Mitt Romney, but we do love Ted Cruz. Or, you know, we do think that, I don't know, let me think of someone else. God, my mind's going blank.
That's okay.
Wow, that's terrible. Or, like, you know, you're excited about Linda Lingle. You're excited about these candidates. Tommy Thompson, who, a 5-term governor, beloved statewide. Mm-hmm. No one else has the juice to beat him there. What is it? Herb Cole is retiring? That's going to be a pickup for us. I really do believe that's a pickup for us. In a state like Wisconsin, where we would need a win, or we could... I don't know that Mitt can potentially get Wisconsin. Wisconsin's a very tricky state. Well, that's a big thing for us.
Well, okay, I don't know if you're involved in this at all, but I would, since you brought up Wisconsin, even though we're running out of time here, I would kind of like your point of view on this with the Scott Walker recall. Mm-hmm. Is this happening?
What do you mean? Is the recall actually happening?
Yeah, I mean, have all the signatures been verified? Is this happening? And does this being a presidential year impact Walker and Thompson? Because I would assume it's all on the same ballot.
I am not exactly sure when. Does the recall take place in November when it's time to vote for the president and senator?
Well, I mean,
that's one thing I don't really know. I mean, I haven't given money to Walker. I'm not going to lie here. I will give money to Walker because he has done a phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm. He has.
I believe the petitions, I think they've been filed.
Yeah, they have been. I know that they were.
Think, you know who to ask for this, I think? Sean Hackbarth has been talking about it a lot lately.
Yeah, he would know more than I do.
Yeah, we need to have Sean on the show again sometime.
I'm not really sure how it affects... I mean, it probably does, considering there's a lot of conservative support for people like Tommy Thompson and Walker.
Yeah.
It probably does that, the fact that it is happening.
Well, I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that. I was just,
it's okay. I honestly didn't know if the recall was a special election or if it actually was happening in November.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I know in Indiana, I mean, we don't have recalls here in Indiana, but when we have special elections, the governor actually gets to choose the time in which it takes place to a certain degree. With a congressional special, he has to choose the primary date, but like when Marlon Stutzman took over in the 3rd congressional, he timed the special election date to coincide, like the special election between the Republican and Democrat to coincide with the general election, so that Marlon Stutzman actually took office immediately. Rather than waiting until January.
I think it's different. I mean, with a recall, it has to be different, because how could he make his own schedule for execution, essentially?
Exactly. That'd be a little weird. So every state's weird like that. I mean, we should make that kind of disclaimer.
Even with the states that are, if you're running for a certain office, you have to get rid of your seat to run. In Florida, if you're running for a different office, you have to concede to run, is what I always call it.
Yes.
That's why Charlie Crist wasn't governor again, which is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, there you go. Well, all right, Dina, I'm sorry to shut you down like this, but we're going to have to. Because we've come to the end of the segment. One of these days, we just need to have you on for the entire show that you can badger Warner and any other guests that we have. Getting you and Whitman on the same segment, now that would be something.
Oh, God, there might be yelling.
Well, then I'm all for it.
Popcorn.
That's right.
Well, I hope I was informative and helpful in all of your needs. Political needs.
You've met my needs, Dina.
Yeah, I did.
All right. We've been talking with Dina Fraioli. Up next, we're going to be talking with Katie Harbath from Facebook. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRRadio.com. We'll be right back after these.
Meet me when I say you'll be lost alone. Liar schemes and soul machines will hang me from my rope. I'm tired of running from what I was into, what I've become.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRRadio.com. Our guest this segment is Katie Harbath. I'm sure most of you know Katie. She is currently the associate manager for policy over at Facebook.com. So, you know, this is social media, delving into social media. Katie, thanks for being on the show this week.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, we want to have you on because obviously we want to get your take and kind of know what Facebook is doing with candidates, with races, and I guess with elected officials in general. I mean, I know that within the last few years, social media has exploded, and we're starting to see more and more people use this kind of outlet to reach out to a constituent base, to anyone and everyone possible to get their message out. How are you guys working with candidates?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's kind of three different really areas. I would say one is pure, you know, customer service, so answering questions they may have about their pages, about building on the platform, anything like that, just being a person, an actual face to Facebook that they can reach out to. I would say the second way is really an educational component. As many people know, Facebook is always changing and always adding new features or evolving those features. So we'd like to work with offices when we announce those just to make sure that they're up to speed and know the different ways that they may use them. And then I would say the third way is really on a strategy brainstorming way. I oftentimes like to email the different folks that I work with ideas of how they might incorporate social media into things they may not have thought of, whether it's direct mail, their television commercials, the events they're doing offline, or even some of the things they're doing online as well.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, so are you the one that I have to complain to about timeline? I say that.
You can complain. You can complain all you want. I'm not sure there's much I can do about it. But, you know, no, we've really seen...
Honestly, I say it in jest. Personally, I enjoy it. I've really been able to at least, you know, adapt my personal page and another one of my pages to timeline. But I work for a member of Congress, and I'm trying to figure out how to maneuver his page into the timeline category. So I honestly do say it in jest.
It's a lot of people. We've had, everyone has done it from Speaker Boehner has really, his staff had time to really put in a lot of milestones and find some really great pictures of him. Other offices are taking a little bit more time to do that, and it really works. It depends upon the office, but
sure.
We found that the more people that, as they get used to it, they tend to like it more and more.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've been able to personally adapt it to myself fairly well. It's an interesting design and an interesting concept. Now, I guess, when I'm thinking about a campaign, you could really, as you're working on a campaign, highlight some major milestones, because I know that, let's take, for instance, the Mitt Romney campaign. They can really hit on a lot of major milestones in terms of this particular race for them with the highlights, with the endorsements that they've recently received. And I would imagine, now, and here's where I'm going to show a little bit of my ignorance. I haven't been to the Mitt Romney page yet, so I don't know if they've switched over, but I would imagine that they have.
Yeah, they were one of the first ones to switch over.
That's a smart move on their part. But how exactly, in terms of strategy, are you seeing some of the, let's just, for instance, focus on some of the candidates out there. Not anyone in particular, but, I mean, just in general. How are you seeing them switch over and use Facebook to their advantage?
So we've seen it a bunch of different ways. One is that people are starting to get much more visual with the posts that they're putting up in Facebook. We found that any post that includes a photo, an infographic, some sort of visual element is getting a lot more engagement and views than just pure text. So you'll see anyone from, Mitt Romney, even President Obama, every single post is having a visual element to it, and they're seeing a lot more engagement that way. You're also seeing folks get creative. So Speaker Gingrich made a page called Romney Record, making milestones of Romney's past, of Romney's career that he might want to forget.
I have this page up right now.
So we've also seen candidates start to use this as a research tool. And a way to get out a lot of the information and back things about a candidate that candidate might would, rather forget or people not pay attention to. I think the other thing is that it has now just become, in some cases, almost a piece of artwork. And we've seen campaigns spend a lot more time thinking about how their page looks, making sure that it looks visually appealing. Because there have been a lot of studies now that show that people make a judgment of you much faster based upon the images they see than necessarily the text that they read.
I mean, I guess that sort of makes sense. I mean, when you see a visual, it's easier to, for better or worse, actually make a snap judgment, and it can also illuminate yourself on a particular candidate without having to really kind of delve into something fairly deep and wordy.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I can definitely see the point of that. And, I have actually up right now the Facebook page that Speaker Gingrich put together. I'm looking at it right now, and it is very visual, but it also has a lot of video clips that, that's something that's, obviously well-researched, but something that you can just kind of click on and get what you need right away.
Exactly. And we've also seen, too, that, people are very sometimes set in what they believe about issues and all of that. And we've seen studies, and I think you're going to see a lot more candidates using, people sometimes love or hate infographics, but they work really well to help. I read a great study at Fast Company about how they're much more likely to change someone's viewpoint than them just reading a paragraph of text.
Sure.
So you're going to see, I think, a lot more campaigns doing that. It's also cool if you look at something like, this is not candidate related necessarily, but Meet the Press. They have a really great Facebook page where they go all the way to the first episode of Meet the Press, and they've got clips and photos of the different candidates and elected officials that they've interviewed throughout the years.
Really? That is pretty neat.
Yeah.
That is just a really, I think, a significant way in which people can get involved. I regularly do a presentation for a local class here in town in Indianapolis on the use of social media, and Facebook is literally kind of taking over the presentation in and of itself. I mean, you could give a presentation on how to use Facebook in a campaign, or even as an elected official, to really drive a point home. And, you know, I'm starting to see a lot of more of these strategy organizations issue organizations really push their message out through Facebook. Facebook is also becoming quite the search tool in a sense, you know, in a competition with Google and even to a certain extent YouTube. I know YouTube is apparently the second largest search engine on the web, but Facebook, with all that you're talking about, it really kind of can put anything at your fingertips.
Well, and I would point out our new Open Graph applications that you're starting to see a lot more of that were launched at the end of September, where now you can see, it was originally launched where you could see what people were listening to, what articles they were reading, and I think you're going to start to see a lot of campaigns start to really integrate Facebook into their websites too. Mm-hmm. So that way people can log in, see what activities their friends are reading, see what articles they're reading, what candidates they're supporting, and be sharing that on Facebook and driving even more traffic back to these sites so that people are sharing when they're donating, you know, when they're volunteering, when they're making phone calls. Mm-hmm. That now every single piece of a campaign can be social, mm-hmm. but you don't necessarily have to be at the exact same place at the exact same time as your friends to make that happen.
Exactly. Well, how do you see this playing out in the 2012 race as we're seeing it? And honestly, as we see a lot coming up this year politically, just in general, I mean, whether it's going on in Congress or on the campaign trail, it seems like this is a big, just an absolutely huge political year. And a lot of this can be played out on Facebook. How do you see this playing out?
You know, I think it's going to be interesting. One, this is such a fast-moving field. For all social media and all the web, mm-hmm. there could still be a tool. Like, what we see now is not what it's... If we have this conversation in November, mm-hmm. we might be talking about things that nobody has even thought of doing yet or that we even, you know, have seen. So I think that's kind of really interesting. Beyond that, I think it'll be really interesting. Not only everyone's going to be paying attention to the presidential race, which mm-hmm. is obviously important, and they have a lot of money, but where I think social media can make a huge difference is in those congressional races, those mayoral races, those state senate races, mm-hmm. the ones where there's not a lot of money. And a lot of times the candidate is using social media themselves. There's a great story of recently a mayor in Rapid City, South Dakota, and the guy who is now mayor ousted a two-term incumbent, and he credits using Facebook ads and using social media to reach out to folks in that city as a big reason for his win, because he didn't necessarily have enough money to be up on TV, mm-hmm. but he had enough money to be using Facebook ads. So I think that we'll see a lot of unique uses and case studies coming out of those local races.
That's an interesting point, because the one thing that I know that you can do with Facebook ads is that you can target down, I mean, down to the zip code, literally.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that you guys have been able to set up Facebook ads is incredible. And a really good tool for, currently elected officials, but you're right, for a campaign, especially for those that might be, you know, struggling in terms of funds. It's with so many people on Facebook, I think it was, you guys are about to break, 1 billion people on Facebook. Is it supposed to be later this year, with more than half the U.S. population on Facebook alone?
Well, I always like to say we have more people on Facebook in the U.S. than voted in the 2008 election.
Wow!
So you can hit, and you know, the interesting thing too about all that we haven't really talked about much is a lot of those people are using mobile devices as well. A lot more of this is moving social as well as mobile, as what, you know, what's happening on your phone. And so candidates who are able to harness both of those. And the age group that is driving a lot of social media use on phones, according to Nielsen, mm-hmm. is people 50 plus.
Really?
Yeah. Obviously,
I wouldn't think that would be the way it would be. You think it would be younger generations?
You would think so, but apparently, I mean, they're the ones driving it. The younger generation is obviously using it too.
Yeah.
But more and more, I think, you know, the 50 plus generation find it easier to use iPhones, Android phones, iPads than they necessarily do a laptop.
Huh.
And so they're using those, and then they're joining social media, probably initially like my parents, to keep in touch with the kids and the grandkids, but then they start finding other people that they know. And they start using it quite a bit too. So you're getting, you know, campaigns used to think that, oh, it's just young kids on social media. Mm-hmm. No, it is the people who are going to volunteer for you, who are going to vote, every single age range.
Yeah. That isn't that's an incredible way to look at things. I mean, you know, Facebook does attract like the broad spectrum of user. I mean, you're right. You used to be able to pin it down on, you know, oh, it's probably someone who is, you know, in their teens or 20s, but it is everyone. Literally everyone is on Facebook now. Not literally, but I mean, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, it's just the way that you view Facebook. I mean, you know, you can and you can target specifically. I mean, go back to, if you don't mind, the direct mailing. Is that, does that kind of go back to doing the targeted ads, or how else do you do targeted mailing? Or
So I think it's a combination. When I was at, so before I was at Facebook, I was at the Republican Senatorial Senatorial Committee last cycle. Mm-hmm. And we raised 9% of our online funds through direct mail. And the way that I sort of credit that is not only having URLs and stuff on the direct mail, but also chasing that direct mail with ads targeted to those same that same demographic,
mm-hmm.
On places like Facebook and Google. And so somebody, you know, somebody gets a big pile of mail, they might look at a direct mail piece, they might not. But then we found that if you also, you know, then all of a sudden they're online that night and they see an ad saying something similar, they're probably going to be much more likely to perhaps click on it,
mm-hmm.
than they might be to look at a direct mail piece, fill it out, find a stamp, put it in the mail. It's just so many extra steps for them.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that way. And then if you look at television, we have done studies with Nielsen as well that people who see an ad on TV and then see an ad on something like Facebook where they also see their friends,
mm-hmm.
who are supporting that candidate, they're 60% more likely to remember that message.
Really?
So because you had...
So, okay, then... Okay, go, finish your point there, because then I'll have a follow-up question.
I was just going to say, just to finish it up, and the reason for that was it had what we called social context.
Mm-hmm.
So you were seeing friends who were already supporting somebody. So it related much more to you than what, you know, your traditional advertising, which is just hitting people up, and you don't know if any of your friends or anybody in your social group also, you know, uses that brand or likes that candidate.
Sure. We're talking with Katie Harbath from Facebook.com. Katie, real quick, as we're about to wrap up here, you touched that on, you know, seeing your friends associate with a particular candidate or not. Obviously, the young group went out for President Obama in droves in 2008. With the continued growth of Facebook, not just politically, but I mean in everyone's lives, do you see Facebook kind of leveling the playing field with the youth vote, or do you still think that there is going to be, or do you still think that President Obama might still have that edge?
Well, I think the biggest thing there is to realize that Facebook is still only a tool. Same thing with, you know, Twitter or any online, you know, mm-hmm. online tool.
Yeah.
The messaging still matters and how you engage with people. So I think that I don't think either side has the youth have any vote, frankly, sewn up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll be the candidates that engage the best with people on social media, have a good message, and actually, you know, want to hear from their supporters and talk with people on social media, not just treat them as ATM machines or just expect them to, you know, have a one-way conversation. People want to have a lot more. And we're just starting, you know, we're just going to start, let me say this again, we're just starting to get into the general election.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too early to really tell right now where it's necessarily going to go, especially as the Republican nominee has a chance to try to catch up to President Obama in terms of the amount of money raised, the size of their digital team,
sure.
and all of that good stuff.
Sure, exactly. Well, Katie, you have kind of shed some light on what's going on this year in terms of social media and how candidates are using it. I really appreciate you coming onto the show this week.
No, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. We've been talking with Katie Harbath, Associate Manager for Policy at Facebook.com. Where, Katie, can they find you on Twitter?
Katie Harbath, KatieHarbath, and same thing on Facebook.
Excellent. Of course, I would have to, you know, they'd have to find you on Facebook.
Yep.
All right. Again, Katie Harbath has been our guest. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
FTR Radio is from the right radio. Online, at FTRradio.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With us again this week, back-to-back weeks, I hope you guys don't mind, because we certainly don't. We have National Policy Director for the Young Republican National Federation, Dr. Jason Whitman. How you doing, Jason?
Good. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing just fine. How you doing, Mark?
You know what? I'm okay, but Jason has failed me today.
Hey, you can't...
Today is a day full of fail.
It's a full of...
Full of fail.
You can't blame a man on Easter Sunday who's just eating a ton of food for being a little late for a phone call.
That is a lame excuse if I've ever heard one before in my life.
Well, he's also...
I take it Mark Warner does not have children.
No, he doesn't.
Okay.
See, there you go.
Well, that tends to complicate things on Easter.
It most certainly does.
Hey, I have certain expectations.
I'll judge you. We'll judge you if we want to, Mark.
Absolutely. The judgment is full on right now. This is a full-court judging press right now.
That's right. Plus, Whitman is off on that horrible mountain time.
Anybody that's on mountain time anymore, I have a lack of respect for, honestly.
Total lack of respect for mountain time.
Well, the feeling's very mutual for the Eastern time zone left-wing nut gods. Boom!
Well, Jason, we have you back on this week because you recently penned a piece for BigGovernment.com regarding the U.S. Senate and their seemingly big budget problem, in that, you know, they can't seem to pass one.
Well, I mean, realistically, it's only been 3 years.
What was it? Last time we checked, are we at 1,100 days even yet? How close are we to that?
I think today, I haven't seen Ken Gardner's tweet today. I don't even know if he actually did it today.
Oh, it is easy.
But, well, I think we're somewhere around 1,072 or 1,073 days now without a budget from the Senate Democrats.
Good grief. And the House has passed two Paul Ryan budgets. And the two budgets that President Obama has passed have garnered absolutely no votes. None.
Well, a couple of interesting points. Number one, on the Obama budgets, I had an interesting discussion with a Democratic congressional candidate about this, and his take was, well, you know, these are legislative gimmicks.
That's a bit of a stretch.
The legislation that was proposed, the amendment that was proposed in the House and the budget that was proposed in the Senate, were based strictly on what the president presented as his budget idea.
Yeah.
So whether it was a legislative gimmick or not, the fact of the matter is that the budgets that were proposed, the amendment that was proposed, and the budget that were proposed were precisely what he was proposing for his budget, and he still got no votes, none, zero, nada.
Yeah.
So whether it was a legislative gimmick or not, it's still an enormous embarrassment.
And yet he
or
has...
it should be an embarrassment.
You're right, it is an embarrassment. And yet he has a right to just dismiss the Ryan budget right out.
Well, my big government piece was actually entitled, Democrats Consider Passing Any Budget to Be Controversial. And it was based on an LA Times hard news piece, which was actually a op-ed, but it was in the hard news section.
Sure.
I'm sure it was just an oversight on their editorial staff.
LA Times? Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But, the Democrats have made the fact that this budget even passed a controversial issue. And I say, if you consider the passing of a budget to be a controversial issue, you are a failure. You haven't passed a budget in 1,070 days like the Senate Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Your chief officer of your party, the president, has proposed two budgets that are so laughable that they cannot even get a vote.
Yeah.
And the fact that we passed one that doesn't even balance a budget, by the way, until I think it's, was it 2018?
Hey.
I can't remember specifically, but at any rate, it was considered to be controversial. Well, that's just outrageous. That shows you how out of touch with reality Democrats are. They are unwilling to do anything that requires spending cuts. They're unwilling to propose a budget of any kind because they don't want it to actually really be on the record that they're against any common sense fiscal solution. But that's the reality.
Well, sure. Well,
now, hold on a second. You said Democrats and common sense. Now, just stop.
That's, I mean, dude, I laugh, but Mark has a point. I mean, heaven forbid that we even touch the main drivers of our debt, that being Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. You know, heaven forbid we even touch those. No,
those are running at 10% of GDP.
Speechless. Physically,
and rightly so. I mean, if you look at, Heritage produced a really great chart where they compare defense spending as a percentage of GDP and entitlement spending as a percentage of GDP, and currently we're sitting at about 5% on defense and 10% on entitlements. And yet the only cuts that Democrats are willing to propose are to the defense budget.
Well, of course, because...
Which is stunning. I mean, it's appalling. We live in the most dangerous time that we've ever lived in, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
And yet, Democrats' only solutions to fixing our fiscal crisis are to cut the defense budget, the one major constitutional obligation the federal government has, cut that budget, or tax the wealthy, which has been proven over and over again, will do absolutely nothing to solve even the deficit crisis, let alone the debt.
Now, hold on here. You said constitutional requirement. You're a rhino. Do you know what those are?
Well, all rhinos eventually look at the Constitution.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we read it.
We occasionally. Yeah. Makes for good bathroom reading, right?
Yeah, I mean, I blow off my copy every once in a while and take a look at it.
Okay. Sorry, just had to say something there. No, but back to serious
matters.
We don't worship
it like you do, though.
Hey, it's a founding document. What can I say? You know?
Let's just say that even rhinos don't believe it's a living, breathing document.
Well, so I'm with you there. Okay, I'll give you that. That's true. It's not. But anyway, back to the matter at hand. The Democrats and their inability to have common sense or pass a budget. So, okay, did you happen to ask this particular congressional candidate what Democrats have in mind other than a ploy?
Well, I did, and I got two responses, either from the candidate.
Oh, well, okay.
One was from the director of Wyoming Public Radio, who said that it was well played. His tweets to me were well played, which I found humorous, which was excoriating me for these believing in these legislative gimmicks that they demonstrated anything useful. So that was fairly humorous. And then the other response was crickets, actually.
Oh, well, that seems to actually fall in line with what they want to do. They want to...
He's a great Democratic candidate, obviously.
Obviously.
Because, as opposed to actually discussing, well, other than calling the plan, the Ryan plan, controversial, and discussing potential options, as in what is your party going to do to actually solve the problem, that might actually get some votes, by the way. Nothing. No response. There won't be a response because the Democratic Party is not going to do anything to try and solve the debt crisis. They don't care.
Well, no, because
they don't care about spending.
Well, in a sense, I mean, it's kept them, it's kept an issue alive for them. I mean, they can still talk about it. It's what they probably hope will keep them getting elected. I mean,
I mean, it is what keeps them in power. What they essentially are doing is they're buying their power from their loser constituency.
Well, okay.
That's what they're doing.
I tend to agree. So how does this start playing out? How do leaders like Mitch McConnell and others in the Senate, because really they kind of have to kind of carry the ball here, and they have. I mean, I think they've done a reasonable job of pressing Senator Reid on these issues. I see most of the fire coming from the House, and I think that's mostly because it's that the plan originated in the House, as it, well, constitutionally has to. But, again, that pesky Constitution.
Well, and of course, Republicans control the House, so that helps.
That too, yeah, exactly.
So the adults are actually in control in the House, so.
Thank you, Mr. Whitman. Thank you. The adults.
Now, over in the Senate, on the other hand.
Hey, I thought the adults were in control of the leadership over on the Republican side. At least that's what you rhinos tell me all the time.
Well, that doesn't really do a whole lot as far as getting any legislation introduced. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Senate rules, but I don't have a whole lot of options.
Okay, that I would take that as a zinger, but here's the God's honest truth. I probably don't know, and I'm not as familiar with the Senate rules because I'm more of a house hound. My background is working for congressional members, not Senate members. So I think it would be fair to say that I'm not as familiar with the Senate rules.
And we're willing to make allowances for that, Josh, honestly.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you.
Suffice it to say, it's really hard to get entered. It's really hard when you don't have a functioning majority. It's really hard to get legislation introduced.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Senator Reid has been able to table any kind of legislation that comes in from the House. The 30 jobs bills, you name it, whatever the House sends up to him, he's able to just ignore it, essentially, mm-hmm. for all practical purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why the Senate is such a critical body for us to win.
Sure.
We're not going to get to 60 votes. It's virtually impossible for us to get to 60 votes.
Well, it would
really be nice to break a filibuster, but at least we then have the potential to introduce some useful legislation.
Sure.
And get it out there.
Sure. We're talking.
We can't do right now.
We're talking with Jason Whitman, National Policy Director for the Young Republican National Federation. Jason, what do you think the odds are of Republicans gaining a majority in the Senate? I know 60 is not reasonable. I'm willing to admit that. I think most Republicans are probably thinking, yeah, okay, we just want a majority at this point. Is that even in the cards?
I think it's very reasonable to assume that we'll end up with a majority, probably 52 or 53 seats.
Really?
Okay. I was looking at Larry Sabato's crystal ball and his his study of the Senate races in the country, and I felt like it was fairly accurate. I didn't really have anything I disagreed significantly with the mm-hmm. one exception, which is Maine.
Sure. Well, you think Republicans will be able to hold on to Maine,
I have one of my colleagues in Maine who thinks that Angus King, the gentleman currently favored by Sabato to win that seat, that he'll actually end up splitting the vote and losing.
Really?
What my colleague in Maine believes. And so I think that there's a chance that Republicans will hold on to that seat, which would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if King gets it, that's going to be a problem. He's an independent, but he'll caucus with Democrats, so...
Yeah.
So it's functionally a Democratic seat at that point. So that's one that would really be nice for the Maine Republicans to hang on to.
Mm-hmm. Do you see? Is it Susan Collins who's retiring?
It's Olympia Snow.
Olympia Snow. Sorry, I always forget. The true conservative that I am, I tend to confuse the two.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
No. Well, do you think Senator Snow will get behind Angus King at all?
Well, I don't really know the answer to that, to be perfectly honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Do you think her if she did, her endorsement would carry any weight, or is it so much that she's unpopular?
I honestly believe that whoever wins the Republican nomination for that seat, that Snow will support that person. That's what I believe at this point.
Okay.
And I believe that my colleague in Maine, if I were to ask him, would probably agree with that.
Where are we looking at other potential pickups?
Well, Montana would be nice. A lot of people think, well, Montana doesn't really matter. Well, John Tester, who's currently the U.S. Senator from Montana,
mm-hmm.
is one of Obama's most trustworthy senators.
I was going to say, yeah, he's a pretty influential senator.
He is, and we really pick that seat up. He's running against the current congressman from Montana, because Montana's that large, of course,
yeah.
which is Denny Rebert.
Mm-hmm. Now, Montana is largely regarded as a red state, but they've elected a Democratic governor and a Democratic senator in recent years. Do you think there's any reason to believe that Republicans can take that seat back that Tester originally took in 06?
Yeah, I do believe so. That race right now, the last poll I saw had Rehberg ahead by 3, and that was in February. So that, I haven't seen any recent polling.
Mm-hmm.
Although the last time I flew out of Billings here a couple weeks ago, there was a bunch of Gallup people on the airplane, so I'm assuming that was the race that they were in Montana investigating. So I'm expecting some sort of new polling data out of Montana pretty soon.
Oh, that'd be good.
But
to hear.
That's a seat that we'd really like to pick that one up. And Montana is kind of a weird state. It's a little bit like Colorado. It's a little bit purplish.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really as red as you would think. And that's, I think, largely a function of the number of colleges and universities in Montana.
Really?
Yeah, Montana. I think Montana tends to sort of attract a lot of of the more liberal left-wing types, because it is a winter recreation state. Mm-hmm. It is, for lack of a better term, sort of a granola eat type state. It's a little bit like Colorado in that regard.
Yeah.
I didn't think that about Montana, though.
Yeah, no, it's really a surprise for most people. But they do have a good Republican Party in Montana, and I think that they have a really good chance to pick up both the governorship in Montana and the U.S. Senate seat in this cycle.
Really? Well, that would be encouraging.
That would be great.
Wow. Well, we've been talking with Jason Whitman, National Policy Director of the Young Republican National Federation. Again, Jason's recent piece has been published on biggovernment.com. So all of the stuff that we've been talking about here, he goes into a lot more detail there. And Jason, what was the name of that piece again?
It was...
Put you on the spot here.
For Democrats, passing any budget is controversial. And it was published on... Which is true. That's what they claim.
No, that's true.
They don't pass any budgets, and then they call ours controversial when we finally do pass one. But
yeah.
So that was published at biggovernment.com. I have quite a few pieces at Big Government. That was my most recent one.
And where can they find you on Twitter?
At Jason D, as in boy, Whitman.
Excellent. Jason, thanks for being on the show this week.
Failure. Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
All right. I want to thank all my guests. And stay tuned for the Snark Factor with Fingers Malloy coming up next. Don't speak like me.